Marjorie Cameron, part two. We're going further down the spiral, folks. Further down the occult spiral we go. If you listen to part one, you know we already covered a little bit on the life and influences of Marjorie Cameron. Talked a little bit about Jack Parsons fulfilling the occult destiny and the mysterious Babylon working rituals with Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard. If you're a Patreon supporter, you got a little bit more. You got a little talk about the John D. Edward Kelly Enochian magic, the magical name, Jack Parsons with the tarot cards, and a bit after the Babylon working, strange deaths, and this mysterious black box. Well, today, in part two, we're going to go further down the spiral. We're going to talk about Cameron's new magical name. She opens the black box. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, supposed to be before that, but yeah, she opens the box. Can you believe that? You won't believe what happens. We're going to talk about her role in the 1960s. We're even going to get into a little bit of the Cakes of Light, Abramovich's spirit cooking. Talk about the Beat Movement and so many of the influences that Marjorie Cameron had on Hollywood. So buckle up. Here is part two. Okay, so we got done going through the birth and childhood of Marjorie Cameron, her time in the Navy, and Jack Parsons, her experiences in Jack Parsons' life, in the Babylon working, the big ritual that Crowley himself was a little uneasy with. So what happens after post Jack Parsons? Marjorie Cameron continues the Babylon working. She goes further down the occult spiral. She proceeded to go down to Mexico. She conducted her first blood ritual. This is called Aleister Crowley's Bornless Ritual. A ritual some claimed was an exorcism. Others say it holds great danger because it could put one in contact with demonic entities. And this took on she took on a new magical name. As you recall, Parsons gave her the first magical name of Candida or Candy. So she took on this new magical name, Hilarion, a magical consort to Jack's name, Balarion. Now you recall the black box that Jack Parsons had with the warning not to go further or you'll lose your life on the top of it. Well, Cameron took possession of this, and inside the box, Parsons had info about Cameron's role in this Babylon working, because she didn't know this at the time. In defiance to the warning on the top of the box, Cameron opened it up and read about her role, something that actually came as a surprise to her because Jack never told her everything about it. So imagine reading this manuscript about how you were the Scarlet Woman meant to birth the Antichrist. So, of course, and that did not happen before Parsons blew himself up or whatever happened there. Cameron started doing witchcraft now because she believed herself to be an actual witch. Now, to revisit the Babylon working, there were multiple interpretations. And the book by Spencer Kancer goes into these. Number one, the first interpretations of the Babylon working is that it was purely symbolic and a metaphysical exploration to foretell the changing times and waken up the libido of the masses. Now, what's curious here is that sounds a lot like Century of the Self. You know, I talked about Century of the Self in the three-part series in the summer of 2018, if you haven't listened to them yet. But in the Century of the Self, Wilhelm Reich, who thought that the libidos were suppressed and causing mental problems in the masses. Now, he thought that the inner being of humans were good things, not the irrationality and furnace of emotions that Freud saw. talking about Wilhelm Reich, and that the true inner human was actually being suppressed, which caused irrationality. So basically, the root of all this is the libido, which needed unleashed, and neuroses was due to the lack of an orgasm. So that is sort of in concert with interpretation number one, that Babylon Working was symbolic and a metaphysical exploration of the changing times and meant to waken up the libido of the masses. Now, the second explanation, this was held by the Agape Lodge Inner Circle. Of course, the Agape Lodge was the Pasadena OTO Lodge that Jack Parsons was running for Mr. Crowley himself. And he thought that it meant to Babylon Workings were meant to result in an actual physical birthing. And Jack was going to create the Moon Child, a magical offspring between Jack and Cameron, infused with Babylon's spirit from the astral plane. Now, what we don't know, we're unsure which one Jack Parsons subscribed to. He talked as if it was a physical child, but was adamant with all of his wives that there would be no children in their marriages. Apparently, he did not like kids. And I can't blame him. When you're living in Pasadena, right down the street from Disneyland, you probably are tired of seeing those kids. So we don't know which one that he subscribed to, but either way, they thought they were doing the work of Aleister Crowley to usher in the new age. Now, we know Crowley wasn't thrilled about Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard. And he said, quote, "Apparently Parsons or Hubbard or somebody is producing a moon child. I get fairly frantic when I contemplate the idiocy of the louts." Because he thought that Jack Parsons didn't have the proper training to do this sort of thing. Some people claim that he believed that they would rip a hole in the sky and improperly close it. If you are up on your history, 1947 Roswell, that's what happened. Now, what did Marjorie Cameron believe? Because that's the main subject of this talk. She believed that she was the vehicle for Babylon, the second interpretation, the Rosemary's Baby, because she saw Jack writing to Crowley that there would be a secret sign, and Cameron remembers seeing a cigar-shaped UFO when they were together. Jack drew a UFO of a circle with a trine inside of as the sign. Another idea was that Cameron was an elemental, which would mean she had no soul. Very curious, isn't it? Now, Cameron, she attempted, I'm saying Cameron, it's a joke, that's a rapper. Cameron, she attempted contact with Jack via the astral plane, because he was dead, of course, right? She did a little ghost provocation with her EVP machine, and this is what the book says, okay? Don't shoot the messenger. She brought a time traveler from the future back with her on accident. She broke down mentally to the point that she was believed to have been institutionalized. Now, all of this was trauma from losing Jack, which actually makes me very sad. I feel bad about that. I don't like to see anybody die or suffer. I'm just a big bleeding heart. But she had some real struggles, right? She was trying to make contact with, and she was a master witch. She was the Scarlet Woman, and she didn't even get it right, which is what I constantly harp on. If I were to pick on these occultists, that's why, because I think it's a very dangerous territory, especially for people who aren't aware of what they're doing. People who watch these shows like Ghost Adventures or whatever, and they think they're going to do a little fun ghost hunt. I think it's dangerous territories. So, ultimately, Cameron thought she was the key to fill Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons' Babylon prophecy. Confirmed when she read the black box. Now, she had a bird And then you probably know where I'm going with this. I talked about this on the Patreon only episode where I talked about saving the birds. But she had a bird that died one day, and it had been laying in its cage for several hours. And Marjorie came home, put the bird in her hand, stroked it with her finger for 30 minutes, and it came back to life. That's what the story is. Again, don't shoot the messenger. That's the story. Charles Manson did it too. He picked up a dead bird in the desert, breathed into it, and it flew away. And I also saved a bird. But you got to be a patreon.com/Illuminati Watcher supporter to hear that story. That's right. It was published on November, I think, 1st? I don't know. Beginning of November 2018. On an episode called A Fireside Chat with Isaac. So I appeared on a show, Mr. Lance White's A Fireside Chat. And I made some bonus content for the Patreon supporters. And that included my bird story about saving the bird. You can see a picture of the bird on my Instagram, Isaac Weishaupt, at Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. There's the bird. But anyways, yeah, Marjorie Cameron did it too. Joining the club. What is it with the birds and the occult? Could it be the stages of alchemy, which are represented by the four birds? You got the colors black, white, yellow, and red. Culminating, of course, with red as the phoenix. Back to Cameron. Now, another magical group called the Silver Star, they believed that one's holy guardian angel was the projection of one's highest spiritual self. At the Agape Lodge, a woman named Jane Wolfe helped Cameron join the Silver Star as her guide. Now, you have to know something about these groups that in the Silver Star, they worked mostly solo. They only report to one person above and below them. Sort of a pyramid scheme of magic, I don't know. But Cameron was getting into these concept of spiritual sacrifice as she became more in tune with this identity she had as Joan of Arc. Because, of course, Joan of Arc, she was the young girl who talked to spirits and would later have great success in doing that and forecasting the future. But Cameron, she had a very interesting role at this point. We're now in the 1960s, okay? And this section is about art, sex magic, interdimensional contact. She was piercing the veil, if you know what I'm saying. But, yeah, so art, as it's described by Aleister Crowley, is the key to attainment and transmuting one's innermost psychic visions. And Cameron, of course, would be valuable in the world of art. She became obsessed with the idea to produce Jack's magical child, the Wormwood Star, and she died. Oh, I'm sorry. She died. We're not there yet. She did sex magic, as she would visualize sexual union with Mr. Jack Parsons on the astral plane, and she would project her psychosexual will onto the conception while saying abracadabra during climax. Whoa! Now, this is, of course, Crowley's statement, the magical formula for the great work. I think you're freaky. She eventually miscarried this moon child, because she was trying to do this with other men, right? That she had done these rituals for. So she's not having much luck with this. Not yet, at least. Now, Crowley, let's talk a little bit about Crowley. Him and Aldous Huxley met up, and Crowley turned him onto peyote, hallucinogens, which led Huxley to write The Doors of Perception, which led to the 60s movement of turn on, tune in, drop out. Crowley had a direct impact on the 60s movement if you look at how that transpired. This was briefly discussed in the book, but I wanted to add a little bit to that, elaborate a bit. Timothy Leary, of course, he was another LSD guru, and he himself said he was continuing Crowley's work. So there's a connection to be had there with the 60s, this age of Aquarius, with Crowley, as he influenced Aldous Huxley and Tim Leary. Now, Cameron, she started practicing with peyote also in the 60s, which led her to draw the infamous piece of art called Peyote Vision. And if you haven't seen it, it's basically Cameron getting, doing a little doggy style, doing the sex with an alien. And she would eventually get more apocalyptic visions with this peyote, which apparently is a common side effect. Never done it, I don't know. But, and I don't say that in a high and mighty thing. Never done it. But Huxley's second book, Heaven and Hell, actually warned of the schizophrenic side effects of these hallucinogens. Again, these occultists, it's dangerous territory. Now, I don't want to sound like a Puritan either, but these sex, drugs, rock and roll, and occult practices, they seem to rarely have good results. And many of these influential occultists had these mental issues and these dark endings, like Friedrich Nietzsche went nuts and Parsons blew up and Crowley was hooked on drugs, heroin, I believe it was, when he died. Whatever, you know, but you do you, boo-boo. Cameron, she went through this peyote period, including a time where she predicted a race war that would put soldiers under her command. Now, who does this sound like? Sounds like Mr. Charles Manson. Helter Skelter. He was into hallucinogens, too. He believed he would have people under his command. He believed that the black people were going to kill all the white people. And then Manson would resurface from the deserts up in Barker Ranch. And they would put him in charge because they wouldn't know how to, start a new world or whatever. So it seems like Cameron had a similar idea. And this pushed her more so into believing that she was actually the Joan of Arc. And she even started hearing more voices in her head, just like Joan of Arc. So Cameron, she had some women occultist friends, if you will, sent to Bob Hope's house. How fun is that? That's a fun little factoid. And while they were there, Bob Hope spoke about recent sightings of UFOs that he had. Of course, Hollywood has a very dark foundation that they don't really want you to know about. Kenneth Anger lays this out in his book, Hollywood Babylon. He talks about these the industry's rampant history and cover-ups of rape, murder, etc. People like Fatty Arbuckle. Now, Cameron also did a ritual where she ate the cakes of light, composed of meal, honey, oil, and menstrual blood. You know where I'm going with this. Marina Abramovich, Spirit Cooking, Pizzagate. go back 2 years to 2016. And this was all the rage at the time in the world of conspiracy theory. This performance artist who does a lot of similar weird things like Cameron, Marina Abramovich, she did these spirit cooking events where celebrities, Lady Gaga, I guess John Podesta's brother, they would come and they would do these weird things where they would eat things that were very reminiscent to Crowley's Cakes of Light, a Gnostic dark mass that had bodily fluids as part of the Eucharist. As a side note, Abramovich, there was a documentary I watched called The Space in Between about her. She says she's an alien. She says, what she actually says, I'm elaborating a bit, but she says that her DNA is galactic and she's not from this world. So, of course, that does mean she's an alien. We hear this all the time from musicians, Kanye West, He said he was the starseed alien. Lil Wayne, he has a song, I'm Not a Human Being. And this ties in together with Marjorie Cameron because she thought she was also an alien. She was the spirit of Babylon. If you're not familiar with rap and the occult, you need to get familiar. Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, that's the book I wrote. It's available on Amazon, Audible. Through the spoken word, I narrated the audiobook. You can get it for free if you sign up for a free trial on audible.com. I say that, no, seriously, there's a lot of research that went into that, and I talk about this concept of the musicians saying they're freaking aliens, and it's still happening to this day. Triple X Temptation, he depicted himself as an alien too before he died. Anyway, so there's a whole thing there, right? And it's, of course, occult-related, as you can clearly see through the hijinks of Marjorie Cameron, Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, L. Ron Hubbard, and so on. All these occultists. Now, Abramovic, she also said, going further down my side note here, she also said that she spoke with invisible entities as a child and how she could interpret many symbols with meanings like those from the Rosicrucians and Blavatsky. Again, it's the same stuff over and over. Now, what could it be? Well, I already did the research. I got the answer for you. It is because people like Kenneth Grant have said that this dark zone, the Mav zone, this hidden realm on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, Dayoth, whatever you want to call it, it's the source of artistic impulses and demonic entities. Boom. Now, that is a lot of the reason why you see these artists. They have to go kind of crazy because they have to go into this hidden realm. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what happens. You have to make it into the inner circles to understand these things, though. But I've done the research, and it's all available right there. I talk about this in The Dark Path a lot, too. So, Cameron, she makes it to Hollywood. The land of magical illusion. She was homeless for a period. She stayed with Renata Drukes in Malibu. Now, who was Renata Drukes? She was a painter, an artist. She was friends with Anais Nin, a famous French novelist. Nin said the following about Renata. Quote, Renata's gift is a heightened mood which communicates itself to others. She creates in a state of natural intoxication. You can see why she's a great novelist. But Drukes, I found it very curious. Drukes once saw an apparition above her head that was an alien with a neon-colored brain and a spinal column for her tail. She asked Cameron's magical partner Jane Wolfe about it, and Jane told her it was the product of one of Cameron's conjurations. It's not only are they talking to these aliens and these demons, they're bringing them into the world. Now, further side notes here, because as you know, most of these notes are coming from the Wormwood Star book, but I do have added commentary I've included. It was through this Drukes-Nin combination that Cameron made contact with Kenneth Anger. Now, who's Kenneth Anger? He plays a big role in these occult studies in the 21st century. So we do need to talk a little bit about him. He's a filmmaker known for utilizing occult symbolism and sexual themes. Homo things. Before homosexuality was legal in America, he released films as early as 1947, a film called Fireworks, that depicted homosexual men. He's also known as a key influencer on MTV because he created the idea of the music video when he combined pop music with moving images. Now, he comes up in my book on the Star Wars conspiracy because he has connections with so many famous people. Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones, Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin, and Bobby Boussole. Charles Manson, of course. He was in the Manson gang. He was a musician as well. You could probably do a whole show about Bobby Boussole. Anyways, Drukes threw a masquerade party once where guests were instructed to come as your madness. And Anger had this party as the motivation to create his film Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome, which comes up in Cameron's story, which we're going to talk about real soon. But back to notes from the book. Kenneth Anger once made a claim that he received footage from Walt Disney himself of child things, if you know what I'm saying. I have to be careful the words I use. I don't want to get my podcast banned too. I get banned from YouTube and Google doesn't like me. So we'll just leave it at that. You can fill in the blanks, but that was in the book. I don't know if it's true. Anger met Cameron and said, quote, "I've been waiting to meet you for 1,000 years. Beautiful, right? He was implying that she was his next film star. Nin, a nice Nin, became jealous of her and wrote, quote, "Cameron is the dark spirit of the group. There is an aura of evil around her." Oh, boy. Now, Curtis Harrington, he's an avant-garde filmmaker of a similar variety. He once said, quote, "I know of a certain house in Pasadena where they have secret satanic rites. And you have to go up into an attic, and then they'll close the trap door and you can't get out." He was referencing, of course, Jack Parsons' house, who this stage is dead in the story, supposedly. And we'll get it more into Harrington later. I've talked about him in the past on my Instagram. In fact, he makes an appearance in my Area 51 tour video on my new YouTube channel, Isaac Weishaupt. Go watch it while you can. The clock is definitely ticking on when YouTube will blow this account out of the website. That doesn't make sense. No, but they're going to review my channel in, I'm guessing, about a month or two. And at that point, they'll probably shut it down because when they banned me, they deleted all my videos and said I couldn't even start another channel under a different name or anything. But you know what? I don't give a shit. I got the truth to spread to you. So I put it back out there. So hurry up and watch that Area 51 video I made. It's real great. Anyways, yeah, we'll get back into Curtis Harrington in a bit. But Anger had Cameron star in this film, Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome, confirming her belief that she is indeed the Babylon Force. Because what's this film about? Well, I encapsulated it for you. It's about Crowley's Thelema religion. And Cameron indeed starred as the Scarlet Woman, or Kali. She's, of course, the goddess consort of chaos and death. And also, the film starred a nice Nin, you know, Miss Jealousy, as Astarte. Now, Marjorie Cameron would move on and get married again. Her second husband, Sheridan Kimmel, a.k.a. Sherry. Very confusing in the book that a man's nickname was Sherry. But he lived in Palm Springs. And he rode on a spacecraft and had sex with aliens. That's what it says. I don't know. He wrote stories of alien women with porno. He did peyote with the local Indians. And had a demonic schizophrenic alter ego named Ball. Oh my, we could go on for hours on this guy, right? Ball. That is a reference to Moloch, the Babylonian entity of child sacrifice. Anyways, that's his alter ego, apparently. He channeled Horus. He did automatic writing through him. That sounds very much like Crowley, right? He was, of course, into all these occult studies, Darrow, Kabbalah, so on and so forth. Now, Cameron's peyote vision art, it kind of comes up a few times in this book. It had unknown inspirations. Some believe that something changed in Marjorie Cameron herself because of her relationship with these extraterrestrials. Cameron's friend, Lori Fox, had these peyote parties in the house, and it brought in people like John Drew Barrymore, who became close friends with Cameron. Cameron once told someone at a house party she was going to use daggers to sacrifice a human being to Aleister Crowley. Now, John Drew Barrymore, of course, is Drew Barrymore's father. And if you recall her story, she was apparently exposed to drugs at a young age, something like 9 years old, through these Hollywood parties. Which, again, only supports these ideas that, like, Kenneth Anger had with his book Hollywood Babylon, where we hear stories about, like, the Me Too movement and, what's that guy's name? I mean, you got Bill Cosby, of course. Harvey Weinstein. Allegedly, right? Gotta throw allegedly in there. Now, Kenneth Anger, he was notorious for pushing the boundaries and of sexual norms. So it was only proper that he went with Dr. Alfred Kinsey, a guy who studied different sexual ideas and themes, to the Cefalù Sicily, which is where Aleister Crowley's Abbey of Thelema was, to investigate the sex magic rituals that he did with one of his scarlet women, Leah Herzig. Very curious, right? Now, Jack's black box. Let's talk about that again. Again, it pops up in the book. He had recordings made during the Babylon workings, but the audio was unable to withstand all the replays, and it was wiped clean. So, this black box did have recordings, but apparently they weren't able to retrieve them. Dean Stockwell, he's an actor. He knew Marjorie Cameron. He said, quote, "My life's had a great deal of alchemy and magic, but I frowned upon Mr. Crowley. A big dark frown. I think he was full of shit." And Dean Stockwell, I think he was on Battlestar Galactica. You know him if you look him up. But he introduced Marjorie Cameron to Dennis Hopper. Now, we have to stay in this sort of time frame of the 50s and 60s. Because the Beat Movement comes up in this book. And the Beat Movement paved the way for The Outsider. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Allen Ginsberg, he brought this Beat Movement to life when he read Howl. That's a bit of a reading. And Ginsberg, of course, has all these weird connections to like NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association. Anyways. The term beat was defined by Jack Kerouac, and both Ginsberg and Kerouac viewed William Burroughs as a mentor. Burroughs, of course, wrote Naked Lunch, which was described as a magical, realist work, and it was initially banned in America for obscenity. And this group of beat writers inspired the entire beat subculture, as well as Charles Manson. Manson always said he wasn't a hippie, he said he was a beat. Beatnik? Yeah, you know what I mean. Now, Colin Wilson wrote The Outsider, which influenced Cameron. He claimed that, quote, "The state of being an outsider in society was the natural home for any great sensitive artist." He also said that such artists were susceptible to manic depression. Now, of course, The Outsider, that is the archetype of the rebel angel, Lucifer, Saturnian forces. The other, the adversary, which explains why they always embody this archetype or channel it or whatever. Does this depression come from approaching the abyss? Cameron lived a life of struggling, described as, quote, "the mundaneness in between the satanic rituals." That's what the book calls it. Filmmaker Dion Vigne said, quote, "I was impressed by her. I loved her artwork. It was slightly satanic, but she had a nice style." Another interesting quote. This is just another little factoid side. Lenny Bruce once said, quote, "We Jews killed Christ, and if he comes back, we'll kill him again." So, like, if you think about Satan as the adversary to Jesus Christ, you can see where these ideas of Satanism run rampant in these occult circles. Now, going back to the Beat Movement, Bob Dylan and Kerouac, they were messengers. describing how the movement was happening, but Cameron was one of the ones who was actually living it. She was actually doing it. She hooked up with an artist named Bert Schoenberg, who was obsessed with UFOs and ET forces, and he started ritually burning his own art to show how unattached to it he was. Now, curious, we saw that happen in 2018 recently with the artist Banksy, when his art went on sale and the frame had a shredder in it, and there it went. Anyways, so Bert Schoenberg, he was described as a walking mystical experience, and he was actually known to break fires out wherever he went. Quote, he was definitely a magnet. Now, it was curious because I wrote a compilation book called Alice in Rocky Horrorland, talking about various tales of occult symbolism. And the Beach Boys had a supernatural fire experience too. I discussed it in that book. But yeah, breaking these fires out, this sort of Carrie-esque sort of thing happening. Or fire starter. Is that what it was? Was it a fire starter? Anyways, you know what I'm saying. But anyways, in this compilation book, Alice in Rocky Horrorland, I talk about The Desert Enigma. It's a book, it's an analysis of Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. I'm going to read it for you, save you some time. But you should get the book anyways, because it's real good. From the book, it says, quote, this is my book. To this day, Coelho claims to be a Catholic, sort of. He says he does not kiss the hand of the Pope, that's for sure. From a 2007 New Yorker interview titled The Magus. And that he's also a, quote, recovering Catholic. Sorry. In that same New Yorker article, the journalist details more about Coelho destroying this manuscript. Quote, I don't regret my experience with black magic, and of course, it gives me a kind of aura. It's good for my biography, Coelho told me. But the only book he has ever destroyed was one about his 2 years in the sect. Christina asked him not to publish it. Quote, this is going to cause you a lot of damage, she said. I got a sign from the Virgin. I deleted it from the computer and threw the hard copy away in a waste bin in Rio de Janeiro. I don't like burning because of the energy. What I find interesting about this story is that it's very similar to the Beach Boys' Fire song from 1967. Its writer, Brian Wilson, allegedly wrote it based on a trip he had on LSD, but would eventually destroy the master copies because he believed it had pyrokinetic powers after a building around the studio in which he performed it burned to the ground. Brian Wilson said, quote, we were all messed up on drugs. We were doing witchcraft and trying to make witchcraft music. Now, another curious element here is that Brian's brother, Dennis Wilson, befriended Charles Manson the next year and had the family living at his home for some time. The Manson family girls were often referred to as the Mendocino witches and even called each other witches. When their family went to conduct the Tate murders, Charles Manson told them to, quote, do something witchy. And of course, that is from Alice in Rocky Horrorland. A great book. You should get it. Amazon, Audible, all kinds. iTunes. I don't know. It's all over the place. Whatever. You'll find it. Go download an illegal PDF and save yourself $10, I guess. You'll make me sad, but at least you have the information. Anyways, back to the book. Back to Wormwood Starr and Marjorie Cameron. Bert Schoenberg. He studied this mystic named George Jurdeff. I totally don't know how to pronounce his last name. Gurdjieff? George Jurdeff? And he believed he had a formula, which is all of everything equals G, the pyramid of objective consciousness, plus 777, the law of Crowley. And I recently, side note, recently on my Instagram, Twitter feeds, I posted an image I saw from, there's a show on HGTV called Desert Flippers, and they were at a house in Palm Springs, which is a hotbed of this paranormal activity. That was 777. And I kind of made a joke sort of about it being the equal to the law of everything. And, you know, those Desert Flippers, they got a good attitude. They gave it a little like-see or whatever. Some big ups. Anyways, Jurdef was basically this occult character that taught how to elevate one's consciousness through what he called the fourth way, through a practice he called the work. Of course, same as the Freemasonic great work. It's very exhausting. It's kind of repetitive, isn't it? Crowley visited Jurdef too. Crowley was a buddy. 1925. And apparently Crowley wasn't that impressed. But that's all just side note material. But Bert Schoenberg was a fan, apparently. So Marjorie Cameron and Big Bert, they went to the desert to a place named Iranbu. What the hell is Iranbu? Well, the book says, quote, "Historically, the desert had always been a traditional place of pilgrimage for those seeking spiritual experiences." And that's what Iranbu is, apparently, right? The Native Americans understood that everything is alive in the desert. Again, you got to read Alice in Rocky Horrorland for my little mini book about The Alchemist, my analysis of Paulo Coelho's book. Because they say that the desert is the greatest teacher. Manson, he took his family out to Barker Ranch in Death Valley to teach them about the impending apocalypse as well. So there's definitely something to be considered with the desert and these occultists. Now, Joshua Tree National Park, this was rich in mysticism because that tree only grows in the Southwest as well as the Holy Land. Isn't that curious? And it's also curious that Alien Con is at the Indian Wells out by Joshua Tree. Alien Con, of course, short for convention, but we all know what it is. It's a con job. And there's a ton of Joshua Trees on the way to Area 51, as you can see on my video on YouTube. So this desert area is indeed a hotspot for UFO activity. So they're out there. And while Big Bert and Cameron are out there, they make friends with George Van Tassel. Who's he? He's a pilot and, again, an alien contactee. Started his own UFO cult based on his channeled knowledge. Again, isn't this exhausting? It's like the same story over and over. For being so creative, they sure come up with the same story, don't they? Channel the secret knowledge from the alien demons and start a cult, I don't know, do whatever. And Big Bert, he warned Van Tassel that he was getting involved with astral forces that were actually dark forces from lower places. Is he talking about the dark tree of life, the Sephiroth, the Klepoth, the dark aliens on the dark side of the tree of life? I don't know. Again, these connections with the dark entities from another dimension are confused with aliens. They believe they're the key to enlightenment, but we all know they're not. Illuminate confirm. Director Curtis Harrington. I told you we'd talk about him again, but here he is. He's the guy who implied that Jack Parsons was doing satanic rituals, if you recall. He made a movie called Night Tide and had Cameron as a sea witch and Dennis Hopper in his first role as a sailor. And a character, Captain Murdoch, he lives in a home with the address of 777, which was also painted on a buoy by Marjorie Cameron. Harrington said, quote, "I sprinkle little occult references throughout my films, just as a little conceit, that some people will pick up on." What do you think about that? We talk about symbolism hidden in entertainment. Well, there you go. Straight from the horse's mouth. Of course, there was that weird connection, because when I went to Area 51 to the little alien, as you can see in my video, you could just go watch it and say, listen to me talking about it. There, in the secret little video room, I found a copy of Night Tide. I was reading the book on the plane out that way, and there's the movie. I never heard of Night Tide before. Freaking weird, man, right? So Bert Schoenberg, he was chosen in 1960 to be one of several artists used to study the effects of LSD by a guy named Dr. Oscar Janiger. Janiger. Spelled with a J. Dr. Janiger is also a cousin to Allen Ginsberg. the NAMBLA beat guy. The result, who's also friends with Johnny Depp, too, by the way. Johnny Depp, that's a weird guy, huh? results left Bert Schoenberg with the realization that, quote, the significance of art resulting from the psychedelic experience could possibly reach to actual magic and beyond. Of course, this left him with problems like psychotic episodes. A little side research. Dr. Janiger introduced LSD to Aldous Huxley. Because you recall, Crowley introduced peyote to Huxley. Huxley wrote Doors of Perception after Crowley turned him on to the peyote. And Janiger was the LSD guru before Leary. Dennis Hopper said, quote, it seems like a lot of men Cameron lived with went over the deep end. Of course they did. Now, let's get back into Cameron. She stuck around Los Angeles because she felt her quote-unquote great work was there. Again, Freemasonic sort of coded occultist language, the great work. It's the will. Do what thou wilt, right? Now, one last little side note that was curious from the book. Bina, on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, is a Sephirot identified with Babylon. And it supposedly shows the power of love. It's Huey Lewis's song, Power of Love, based on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life? I don't know. I haven't looked at the lyrics. Back to the Future, that's got some occult references, right? You've seen that. Again, on the Isaac Weishaupt YouTube channel, you can watch my analyses of Back to the Future with video clips and so on. But yeah, we're going to now get into going further down the spiral, the side effects of the various occultists. And here's where we find Cameron's occult buddies starting to go in the different directions in this new aeon. But this is going to be the exciting conclusion to my three-part Marjorie Cameron analysis. All right, that wraps up part two. There will be a third and final part, where we're going to get into some of the oddities surrounding Marjorie Cameron and talk a little bit about the side effects of these various occultists and what happens when one explores these dark realms. So stay tuned for that. And by doing that, you can subscribe to the show. Subscribe and leave reviews. That's all I ask in exchange for our great times together. Subscribe and leave a review. I read them all. It's true. I know that there are 312 reviews on iTunes right now. You could be one of those. Go ahead and leave a review. Tell me what you like, what you don't like, because I'm going to read it. All right, I want to thank you for your time again. And until part three, be your best for those who deserve your best.